Well, good morning. I'm glad that you're here today. Whether you're in the auditorium or watching online, I want to welcome you. I'm glad that you're here for week four of our hashtag struggle series. We've been talking about how difficult it is for us to live a Christ-centered life as we live in a self-centered world. And as we've been going through this series, we've been talking about topics like contentment, rest, authenticity. And I know as we've gone through the series, it's been a challenge for me. I know as I go through these topics, and I know as we talk to the preaching team, there's certain series that we get into that we go through and go, wow, this is kind of hard preaching, right? Because it's so relevant. It's things that we deal with every day in our life. And so I'm glad that you've been a part of it. If you've missed any part of this series, can I encourage you to go online and catch up with the series? And you can listen online to any one of our campuses, any of our campus pastors. They do a great job. And probably if you start listening to them, you may start going to their campus, right? So that's okay. And we're one church, yay. And so anyway, so we're glad that you are here today. Today we're going to talk about compassion. And in this series, as we talk about hashtag struggles, I was given the responsibility of handling this sermon, right? And so presenting this to the preaching team. And when they told me, I said, hey, we're doing this series. If you could take the compassion one, that'd be awesome. I just started laughing because I thought they were kidding. Because it's like, if you talk about compassion, that's probably not my strength. And now, don't get me wrong, I'm not like heartless, but I did think about the series. I was thinking about things like Suck It Up Buttercup as a title for this thing, Get Over It. I was the kind of parent that when my kids got hurt, I'd look at them and go, it's just growing pains. Come on, let's go, all right? Like, quit crying. There's no crying in baseball kind of mentality of parenting. So when I wrote this, I went through this, and I don't want you to feel like I'm totally heartless, because when I talk to people who've been through really difficult times, they'll tell you, and people in the room will tell you, as they start sharing their life stories, and they start sharing the burdens that they've been carrying, and man, oftentimes I will have tears in my eyes as they're telling me their stories. And my heart breaks for people who've been hurt and have gone through difficult times. However, I don't have a ton of compassion for people that I look at and say, they're a little bit of a whiner. Like, you know, so like, I don't do real well with that. And people who are complainers, I don't do well with it. Experience has a tendency to dictate what kind of compassion we will show to other people, what kind of benevolence we'll have towards others. When you go to one of those concerts, right, when you go to any concert today, it seems like when you listen to these guys, somewhere in the middle of the concert, they stop and they start telling you you need to support children somewhere around the world, right? And so as you listen, are you the person who sits back and goes, so if I start supporting this child, how much money actually goes to the kid? How do I know the money goes to the kid? And how much of it goes to administrative cost? How about when you see those commercials for animals that have been treated inhumanely? Do you look at those commercials and go, okay, if I give to that, where is my money going? And so when we go through these experiences, sometimes we have a tendency to be somewhat cynical because we live in a cynical world. However, as a church, it's important that we don't allow those things, those experiences, whether positive or negative, to influence the way that we reach out and serve other people. We've been given a mission, we have a responsibility, and we can't allow negative experiences to impact us. So when I was in business, oftentimes our paradigm is shaped by those experiences. So we had a customer in business, we sold equipment, and they said they were a tax-exempt organization who cared for animals which were treated inhumanely. And there's something really sketchy about this customer. I mean, really sketchy, that I had a hard time like even believing it, you know? And so we had one of our trucks down in that area, and I said, hey, why don't you drive by this site, this animal rescue place, and just see what's going on down there. And so they drove by this farm, and lo and behold, there's not one animal on the farm. And frankly, the farm was overgrown, and it obviously wasn't a rescue center for animals that have been treated inhumanely. So as I look at experiences, sometimes I see those things happen and I go, huh. However, as a church, we can't allow our cynicisms to drive us. We've got to allow those things that God has called us to, those characteristics that are supposed to be evident in the Christian life, like compassion, to become evident. We are becoming less empathetic as a society. In fact, in 1979, they started a 30-year study about from the University of Michigan with students about empathy. And as they went through that 30 years, they said that people continued to be less empathetic as time went on. As they compared people in 2009 to back in 2019, what are the dates? I'm getting messed up here. Yeah, whatever it is. It's 1979 to 2009. They realized that over those 30 years, people became, I don't know how they figured this out, but they became 40% less empathetic through the years. They started caring 40% less. We were reading a book as a staff called Didn't See It Coming by Kerry Newhoff. And this is what he said when it comes to cynicism. Cynics never change the world. They just tell you why the world can't change. Cynics will never change the world. They'll just tell you why the world can't change. We've been given instructions in Scripture in Ephesians chapter 4. Be kind and compassionate to one another, forgiving each other just as in Christ God forgave you. I want you to know that when we look at our society today, as we look at social media, as we walk around stores, it's really hard to see people being kind and compassionate to one another. And it's really not evident a lot when you see people who actually will forgive other people when they've been wronged. So if this is what we're supposed to be as a church, we're supposed to be kind, compassionate, and forgiving. Why do we care so little by what we see going on in our society? We hear stories of abuse. We see corruption. We kind of see all kinds of social issues going on. But as a church, we have stepped back, and in some ways, we just don't respond in a God-honoring way. We become those whiners. We become those murmurers. And instead of engaging those situations for the good of others and for the glory of God, we just step back and we're cynical and say, we don't want to get our hands dirty. I want you to know social media has not helped. And I want you to know social media is not the villain. Social media just reveals what's already in our hearts. When we go online and we see people talking, all it is a reflection of who they really are. Sometimes when we speak things, right, it's because it's been deep down within our soul. When people say things instinctually and they'll say, oh, I didn't mean to say that. It's like, dude, it's probably down there somewhere and it came out. Kerry Newhoff said this later in the chapter. When you close your heart to people, you close your heart to God. When you close your heart to other people who are going through a difficult time, you close your heart to God. So we're going to, as we set up this sermon, we're going to talk about some of the ways that social media has impacted us as believers. The first thing it's done to impact us is this. Social media has caused us to become obsessed with self. Do you remember the days, think back, way back when, do you remember the days when you actually took pictures of other people? Do you remember those? Like today, it's like we are this selfie generation. It's like, man, I'm going to take a picture of me. I'm eating a hot dog. Look what I made. Look what I've done. Look where I'm at. And it becomes this place where we just become so self-absorbed and obsessed with who we are. We've not only turned the cameras on ourselves, we've turned the spotlight on ourselves. It's really interesting when you look at it. There was a study that was done that when people go on social media, 80% of what they do has to do 100% with them. It's really not about anybody else, it's about them. So as they start going through and scrolling through, and they're looking for things that interest them, things that will help them. It's about them. And they look to see how many likes they have, how many shares they got, how many comments, how many people said happy birthday. And we go through all this stuff, and it's about us. And we get all excited. And what happens is we start getting excited about self. And when we start getting excited about self and we become obsessed with us, you know what happens? It releases this chemical in your system called dopamine. And it's like this feel-good thing that you get in life. And you get this place where you can kind of get this like high. And you get excited. And somebody liked me. And somebody liked my post. And they shared my post. And they made a comment. And all of a sudden, the more dopamine that we release into our system, the more self-centered we become. There's nothing wrong with feeling good, but the more we look for that dopamine to be released, that feel-good chemical in our systems, the less centralized we are when it comes to the more interested we are in God, the less interested we are in other people. We become obsessed with self. Everything becomes about us. Another way that social media has impacted us is this. The overwhelming exposure to suffering has desensitized us. The more pain that we see through social media and online and through technology, the more heartache we see, the more desensitized we become. We hear about people being bullied. We hear about economic turmoil. We hear about political corruption. We hear about people being murdered. We hear about protests. We hear about all kinds of stuff. And as we go through all of this, eventually it all just becomes noise to us. How often do you just say, I just don't want to listen to the news anymore? I don't want to hear it. Horrible things could be happening, and I just don't. It's just noise. As we go through our feeds, we see all kinds of different articles. We see about, hey, here's a great salsa recipe, right? And we go through that, and we see guacamole recipes. And then we see about someone who's in athletics who beat their girlfriend. Then we see funny cat videos. And then we see a guy over in the Middle East who got beheaded because he's a journalist, and he wrote an article that didn't please someone, so they beheaded him. And we see all of this stuff happening, and we have a hard time going through all of that information and trying to say to ourselves, because they're on the same page, and sometimes they almost share equal importance to us because we see it on the same page. We say, what's more important? Is it the guacamole recipe or is it the guy that just could be headed as a journalist? We have a hard time as we go through all of this information, as we see all of this stuff happening, we become desensitized. We become people who are obsessed with self and we really don't care about other people. Third, it perpetuates a lack of personal interaction. There's a place where we can step back and we hear about people losing their jobs or people having a bad day, and we can respond in a very clean way, right? We can keep ourselves clean. Because what do? We look on the emoji list and we find the praying hands and we click on the praying hands and go, yay. And if we really want to spend a lot of time caring for people, what we do is we can look at them and go, hey, praying for you. But the reality is, it's something clean that we can do. It's for the standpoint of just clicking on an emoji, telling people we're praying for them. Oh, I'm sorry. But the reality is, the comment of praying for you stops at that. Do you really ever pray for the people you say you're praying for? When you click on the emoji of praying hands, do you actually pray for the people that you say you're praying for? Because I don't know about you, but on my friendship list, when I have my friends on my social media account, how many of them do you really know? I have people who are friends with me from high school. Dude, I graduated a long time ago. I don't know them. And I hear stuff about their life, and I look at them, and I have no influence in their life at all. And I sit there and go, like, what can I do? Like, how can I help? Oh, it's too bad. And we go on with our lives because there's not this interaction with them. There's not a personal relationship with them anymore. And oftentimes when we hear those things unfolding, we see it and say, like, we don't have that interaction with them. We don't have that personal relationship with them. But also there's people in our community that we do have a personal relationship with, but we draw the same conclusion to say this: I really can't help here, and I'm not really sure I can help here. And so we step back, and we become desensitized. There's no action behind the way we feel. People have used social media as a platform to talk about all of their heartaches, their hurts, their problems, their wants, their desires, and everything else. And we just step back, and it becomes noise. Because we're disconnected. It's interesting when you get connected with people and you interact with people, when you're kind to other people, you're compassionate to other people, you're forgiving for other people, when someone actually is going through a difficult situation, you end up showing up, you're there, you're in the room with them because you do life with them. And when they go through some kind, they just heard they got a diagnosis of some kind, you're there with them. When they're trying to struggle with, do we put our parents in a nursing home or not? What am I going to do? I'm going to lose my job. We're financially struggling in this season. As you go through those periods of time and you're actually sitting across the table from someone, you can see that they're physically shaking. You can see the tears in their eyes. It's easier to disconnect from a distance. It's easier not to care. So can I ask you this as we start? Like, we're just going to start the sermon now, okay? I want you to be honest and don't look at anybody else. I want you to think about you. Are you a person who's become completely obsessed with yourself? You are 100% obsessed with you. You say, well, how would I know that? Listen to your conversations with people. When people walk in the room and say, oh, my word, it's been such a hard day, and I went, oh, I know. Let me tell you about my day. Hey, we're going through a really hard time right now. We're not sure. Oh, let me tell you about me. Look at your Facebook page, your Instagram page, your TikTok page. What's it about? Have you become obsessed with yourself? Have you bought into the me generation? Secondly, have you guys become desensitized to the pain of other people? Do you actually sit there and think about it and go, I really don't care. I don't care. I really don't. And the way you know you don't care is that you don't do anything about it. Because to say you care but not act is really not to care at all, right? So do you actually care? Do you engage people who are hurting? Are you so detached from other people that you don't even live in community? That you don't have to get dirty? You don't have to listen to their problems? I want you to know this. True compassion demands action. True compassion demands action. And what I mean by that, when you look at the word compassion in Scripture, it talks about to yearn from the literal bowels, the inside of who you are. It's to ache from the inside out. Have you ever watched someone go through a horrible time and it makes you physically sick to your stomach as you see what someone else is going through? Compassion is rooted in the word of saying, it bothers me so much of what they're experiencing in their life that I feel it deep down within inside of me, and I have to do something about it. It's not enough. Church, listen to me. It's not enough to have compassionate thoughts. We have to act. To say we care but not act is not to care at all. True compassion demands action. It goes beyond hitting on a praying hands or an angry face because there's some kind of injustice. Caring is loving people so much that you're willing to go across the room and engage them and help them. It's crossing the street. It's getting in your car and driving to go do something. Every time we read about compassion in Scripture, about Jesus, you know what? He does something about it. He felt something and he actually did something. He responds physically to situations. In Mark chapter 1, it says this, and a leper came to Jesus, beseeching him and falling on his knees before him and saying, if you are willing, you can make me clean. Moved with compassion, Jesus stretched out his hand and touched him and said to him, I'm willing, be cleansed. Jesus stepped out to a person who was an outcast of their society. And he says, man, if you want to help me, you can. You can fix this. And Jesus moved with compassion. From inside out, he felt so much turmoil for what this guy was going through. He reached out and touched him, an untouchable individual, and he changed his life. In Matthew chapter 14, when Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, he had compassion on them. And he healed their sick. When he had this yearning from within, Jesus did something about it. He didn't click on, he didn't share a post. He didn't say, praying for you. He did something. Matthew chapter 20, you have two blind guys who knew Jesus was coming, and they kept yelling out, you can take care of this, you can help us, you can fix us. And the crowd's going, shut up. Don't talk to Jesus. But Jesus had compassion on them and touched their eyes, and immediately they received their sight and followed him. True compassion demands action. To say you care and not act is not to care at all. It is tragic that the church has sat back in this world of cynicism and has done very little when it comes to meeting the needs of people outside of their community. The church, unfortunately, has become somewhat self-absorbed with itself. And instead of responding like Jesus responds, we sit back and we want to keep our hands clean. The more I care about me, the less I'm going to care about other people. The more dopamine that's released into my body, the less I'm going to care about other people. But the opposite is true. The more I obsess about Jesus, the less I will obsess about me. There's a place as a church we've been called to deny ourselves, to take up our cross, and to follow him. It's truly stepping back and denying self. It's saying this, I'm willing to put my rights aside to help someone else, to serve someone else, to minister to someone else, to be benevolent to someone else. The more we deny ourselves, we not only show that we are a follower of Jesus Christ, but we will take more opportunities to serve other people. So here's a question. When is the last time? When is the last time that you set aside your rights to serve someone else? When is the last time that you sacrificially gave of yourself to where it cost you something to help someone else out? And if you're going back in your mind and going, wow, let me think. Let me think. And you're having a hard time coming up with something that is recent, there's a possibility that you've been caught up into the me generation. I want you to know that when we reach out and serve other people, your life will be interrupted. There will be this divine interruption where God is going to use you, and the plans that you've made, the schedules that you've put out there are going to get interrupted because God works through those divine interruptions. You think about the time with the feeding of the 5,000. Jesus and the disciples just wanted a break. They were tired. They were going away to find some rest, a little R&R. They wanted to take a mini sabbatical. They wanted to be left alone. The problem is the crowd saw them, and they said, there they are. And they chased after them. And this is what it says. So they went away by themselves in a boat to a solitary place. But many who saw them leaving recognized them and ran on foot from all the towns and got there ahead of them. And when Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. So he began teaching them many things. It would have been so easy for Jesus to say, hey, this is me time. This is about me. This is about our disciples resting. And when he saw these people coming, he said, man, these guys are like sheep without a shepherd. And he had compassion. He yearned from down deep, and he did something. If you remember later in the day, the disciples were like, man, I'm hungry. I want to go eat. He said, well, let's feed these people. And she said, what are you going to feed them? And we see the miracle of the feeding of the 5,000. A divine interruption. Mark chapter 2, do you remember the story of Mark chapter 2? Jesus is preaching, record crowd. House is packed. People are around everywhere. Four guys bring their friend on a mat and says, we want Jesus to see him. Because if Jesus sees him, this guy is paralyzed. Jesus can heal him. We know it. But we can't get into the house. We can't get to Jesus. So they take their friend, what, up on the roof? And they start digging a hole in the roof. They start opening up the roof. And they lower their friend down on this mat before Jesus. You want to talk about interruption? Jesus is in the middle of a message, and here comes this guy on a mat down in front of him. And Jesus had compassion on him, and he forgave his sins, and he healed them. Could you imagine today if we sat here and I was preaching, and you see that roof get peeled back, building material falling in, and all of a sudden somebody gets lowered in here? We'd have our security team going nuts. Guys, I want you to know that God uses those divine interruptions for the good of others and ultimately for his glory. But when we are obsessed with ourselves and our schedules are full, we miss out on those divine interruptions all the time. I'm not sure what a divine interruption may be for you this week. You may be running down the road and you see someone broken down, flat tire, whatever it is. And as you're driving by, you just go, you know what? Somebody needs to stop and help them. And you just keep driving. Have you ever been on a plane or in an airport? And you see a person who's sitting there, noticeably upset, crying? Have you ever said, this is going to be uncomfortable, but are you okay? Can I help you? Some of the best conversations I've ever had with people is on a plane. You want to talk about people who are hurt, going through difficult times in their life, you sit down and just take time to listen to them. It's so much easier to just put the headphones on, right? And just listen to music. But to listen to someone and just there, try to be like just a reflection of Jesus for a couple hours for someone who needs someone to care. How about when that neighbor comes walking down the road with their dog and you see them coming and you can't get in the backyard fast enough? Because really, seriously, it's like, oh, no. Maybe it's just divine interruption. You know, there's people who days without talking to anybody. And for them just to stop and say, hey, how are you today? Good, how are you doing? And to have a 10, 15 minute conversation may mean the world to that person. I'm not sure what your divine interruption is going to be this week, but I'm praying that God gives each one of you an opportunity to either stop and care or to be convicted because you just kept going. I want you to know, though, if you stop, compassion is going to cost. Compassion cost. You think of the Good Samaritan story, right? And we don't have a ton of time to go through all this stuff, but the Good Samaritan story where the Samaritan's walking on the road and he sees a Jew, and the Jews don't, they kind of hate the Samaritans. And this guy had been robbed, beaten, stripped, left for dead. And it talks about the Good Samaritan just coming down this road and sees this guy who's his basically enemy. This guy doesn't think I'm worth anything because I'm not full-blooded Jew. They don't like me. And he sees him and he has compassion. And he reaches down and he starts to help him. He bandages his wound, puts him on his own animal, takes him to a hotel and says, whatever it costs, you take care of and I'll pay for it. Compassion. Today we see things and we hear about drive-by shootings and we say that's horrible. You know what's just as bad? Is when God's people drive by when it comes to compassion. When I see someone in need, I can come up with a grocery list of reasons why not to stop. Why not to help? I'm busy. Somebody else can do a better job. I don't have the ability. I don't have the time. I don't have the finances to help out. I can come up with a whole grocery list of reasons why I can't help. I'll tell you what, it's a lot easier for me just to say praying for you and hit the little emoji button than it is to actually get in my car, drive across town, and go see someone who's brokenhearted. I want you to know that some of you have become very gifted along with me at finding a reason why you can't be compassionate. When you get compassionate, it's going to get messy. When you get involved in other people's lives, it's messy. I think about my kids in Texas. For whatever reason, they decide to foster children. And my daughter decided that she was going to take on babies. So right from the hospital, you bring them home. You know those times you got to get up in the middle of the night? You got to take care of those kids that are crying, they don't feel well, it's colicky. She said, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to minister to these kids. And just a couple weeks ago, they got a baby out of the hospital. 9 months they cared for him because their mission is this as a family. As long as God gives us his child, we will minister to them. We are here to serve them. And after 9 months, she had to hand the baby back. and they were devastated. Again. I said, they're going, why do you do that to yourselves over and over again? Why do you keep doing that? Because they understand compassion a lot better than her dad does. Some of you have reached out to people who are troubled students. And I want you to know, man, you reach out to kids who have a hard background. It gets messy. There are kids that have been hurt and disappointed and abused. And oftentimes there's such a reason for why they struggle with what they struggle with. And to have someone who just walks into their lives and says, you know what? I understand you've been disappointed, but I'm not going anywhere. It's having compassion. From deep down within, it's caring. It's someone who doesn't necessarily have a place to stay. They're going through a hard time. And you're saying, this is going to be hard. But you open up your home. And you have them come in and stay for a season. It's going to get messy. But Jesus reached out and touched a leper. He touched a blind person. He taught people who were sheep without a shepherd. He fed the 5,000. He healed someone getting dropped from the ceiling. I want you to know, those were divine interruptions, and it was for the good of the person, but it was ultimately for the glory of God. God's called you to be compassionate. Finally, compassion changes lives. Every time Jesus got involved, the life was changed. Every time he felt that yearning from down inside, he saw someone changed. As a church, I want to ask you again, when is the last time that you denied yourself? You sacrificed your needs, your wants, your desires to serve someone else, to have compassion. Are we our brother's keeper? Absolutely. Who's our neighbor? Love your neighbor. Who's our neighbor? Whoever God puts in front of you. It can be at a get-together. It can be at work. It can be at your neighborhood. It can be in an airport. It can be on the side of the road. Who's your neighbor? What excuses are you making? I don't know how to change a tire. You know, it'd be cool if you just stopped by and said, hey, I'll sit here and wait with you until someone comes. It's having compassion. We must care. And because we care, we must act. Bob Golfer in his book, I love this. It says, it's easy to agree with what Jesus said. What's hard is actually doing what Jesus did. Loving people means caring without an agenda. As soon as we have an agenda, it's not love anymore. It's acting like you care to get someone to do what you want or what you think God wants them to do. Do less of that, and people will see a lot less of you and more of Jesus. People don't grow where they are informed. They grow where they are loved and accepted. I want people to meet you and me and feel like they've just met everyone in heaven. Could you imagine if this church engaged their community? Instead of just sitting around and being clean, they got messy and they got involved in people's lives. And sometimes when we walked away as a church, people got a taste of what heaven's going to be like. Because they see people who aren't sitting around being obsessed with themselves. Do you like my dress? Do you like this? It's like, I love that bumper video. Man, there's kids starving. Things are happening. I'm not sure I can find a dress that fits me. We have become so self-absorbed. We have become so desensitized to what's going on. There's a place where we are so detached from people and human beings that we just want what we want. And let me tell you what, that is not the mission that God gave the church. He told us to go into all the world and to engage it, not only with the gospel, but with love and compassion and kindness. It's not standing up on social media and telling everybody what we're against. It's telling people what we're for. That in the midst of all that's going on in our world, there's still hope. Can I challenge you this week to look for those divine interruptions and serve someone sacrificially. It's not enough to have compassionate thoughts. We must care, and because we care, we have to act. God, I thank you for giving us these examples in your word as kind of a model for how we're to live. And I realize that none of us are ever going to be Jesus. But man, I pray in some way that we would reflect his love, his compassion, his kindness. For those who are hurting, for those who are struggling, I pray that as a church, we would be totally sensitive to what they're going through. In whatever way, by just being a listening ear, by sacrificing of some of the things that we own, but most of all, by just giving of ourselves, that we will be a service to them, but ultimately we bring glory to you. God, use us in this area of compassion. We ask in your son's name.